Today is the 22nd of August 1994. This is the first in a series of brief interviews looking at the history of the city of Berwick at the broad perspectives. This first one is with Mr. Ross Curry, Deputy Chief Executive and City Engineer. Would you like to begin with the planning decisions that you think were significant for the shaping of the city?
Right, well, the new council that was created when the city was formed, there were some very modern thinkers, particularly the first mayor, Barry Simon. He was a fairly strong person and he had several followers, I suppose, and he saw it anyhow as an opportunity to do some pretty original type planning, and particularly land tenure. We wanted to get away from the old fashioned Torrens title type thing and end up with a development corporation type idea.
Do you think I should mention the development corporation in this account?
Well, this is just very general. You probably wouldn't want to put any of this into a 4 or 5 page booklet, but yeah. I don't know how much this is what happened.
Yeah.
So I think a fair bit of this will be pretty irrelevant to what you're aiming at, but it might be a general sort of interest because it's purely the way I see it. And around that period of 73, 74, it was the Whitlam era, and there was a lot of development corporations were a bit of an in word. There was the Albury Padonga Development Corporation and the Orange Canberra. Bathurst and the one in
Canberra.
Yes, and the one in South Australia, the Elizabeth or whatever it was near there, but Manara was it, somewhere around there. And the idea was that there'd be most of the larger properties, I think it was over a couple of hectares or some such figure, would be bought up by a public authority and released in a sort of a long-term leasehold type thing, like Canberra type thing.
Mm.
This was taken a lot out of context because it got around that people were going to have their houses taken off them and you know, by Big Brother sort of thing, and it was never intended, it was only for the bigger properties. And then there was all the federal government, there was a lot of criticism of the federal government doing similar things, and there was Jim Cairns and all that was involved in it,
The loan scandal.
Yeah, the loan scandal of the 70s, early 70s. Rex Connor was one of the federal ministers that was involved in it, and they're going to get all this Middle East money and so on. The Clark, can't pronounce it, but anyhow, it doesn't matter. But it was they were going to borrow billions to sort of buy up everything and so on. And it all sort of got interwoven and mixed, and at the end of the first year of the city, which was a very successful year, and they used Loader and Bailey as planning consultants to get heavily involved in the actual physical planning as well as the financial component of setting it all up. And at the end of the first year, there was a fairly fiercely fought election, and Barry Simon was defeated, along with Joan Phillips, who was one of his supporters, and David Lee, who also was probably one of his supporters, even though he never contributed a lot in the first year. He was a fairly silent person. Those three got defeated, and that brought the balance, that the one they were defeated by fairly conventional, conservative type councillors or people that sort of had the thinking, the old-fashioned thinking, and they, along with the existing councillors that thought that way, the city of Berwick basically dropped all the fairly way-out ideas, which I think had a lot going for them, really, but the timing of it just couldn't have been worse. And from that point onwards, we just continued on as another municipality with fairly conventional ideas. So it was really that first year that where there could have been a fairly major change in the sort of land tenure system. Lover and Bailey basically finished their brief, excuse me, and their work was always used, and still is to this day. But some of the things that they proposed were just not practical to proceed with. And the main one was the relocation of the freeway. The freeway route, as we know it today, was the same as it was before the city was formed. But Loder and Bailey were of the view that the freeway route should be shifted further south, south of the railway line, and not diagonally go right through the residential part of the city. This, in theory, was probably correct if you were starting from an absolute greenfield situation, but the fact that the CRB had acquired a large percentage of the route at that stage, it was just not a practical thing to make such a major deviation in the freeway. So the metro town concept and the shifting of the freeway became a bit of a non-event. The other thing that Loder and Bailey were very keen on was the green break down in the Tinks Road area between Tinks Road and Belgrave Hallam Road, and they wanted to keep that area, which a lot of it was flood prone and encumbered by the SEC easement, to keep that a green break and not be residential. This wasn't to be. There was application. There were subdivisions that won on appeal. And it's best history that it's now, but most of that's been eroded away over the years into residential development. A lot of pretty high activity down there at this point in time. So there's going to be still be a little bit of green break around the Troops Creek West Branch and the SEC encumbered land, but nowhere near to the extent that Loder and Bailey proposed in 73. So those things I've just mentioned sort of were basically things that didn't happen, I suppose. Mm-hmm. If I go on with perhaps the things that did happen, and I think were probably pretty significant, and that was acquiring the land for major road reservations along Heatherton Road, in particular, but Heatherton Road, Belgrave Hallam Road, Hallam North Road, Hallam South Road, Narrewarren Cranbourne Road, Narrewarren North Road, and Berwick Cranbourne Road. Now, these were basically chain-wide roads, 66 feet, and a lot of them were in large, the adjoining farms that were being subdivided into residential allotments in most cases were in fairly large holdings, and there was a lot of wheeling and dealing and negotiations at the subdivision stage. Max Pawsey was heavily involved in a lot of this, one of his aims to, at the time of subdivision, to get land given to council or set aside so that ultimately these roads could be divided roads with tree reserves and so on. And that's been very successful, and that's that the on the roads I just mentioned before, they're pretty much in place throughout the city. On some of the where there's been very small land holdings, there's had to been some properties acquired, and as time's gone on, particularly in recent years with the state of the economy and so on, it's been more difficult to get developers to hand over at no cost large tracts of land. But I think from a planning sense, if I had to name the most successful component of planning, it would have been getting the road widenings and along the major arterial roads for minimal cost to council.
What about the cell plans?
Yes, the cell plans, we've always been strong in cell plans. Right from day one, we've been very much involved with cell plan. And
what's the philosophy behind those?
Well, it was to produce an outline development plan based on all the physical constraints, such as creeks, catchments, physical barriers such as SEC easements, freeways, roads, zonings, and in particular land ownerships, so that when anyone came in to develop their piece of land, they could see where their land fitted into the overall picture. Mm-hmm. Cell plans or outline development plans have to be fairly flexible. They're not a statutory document, but they're a very, very good guide to landowners to ensure that their part of their land fits the overall jigsaw, and that the roads will link up and the roads will be the required widths, and that open space will link up, and in particular drainage and sewage in the services that rely on gravity, that their infrastructure all can fit together, and we don't have any small areas of the city that can't be serviced. Schools were another thing, with particularly primary school catchments. The outline development plans played a lot of emphasis on trying to get catchments that could justify a primary school without children having to cross major roads and things of this nature. A fair emphasis on pedestrian linkages to schools and shopping centres and other major pedestrian attractors.
So there's an emphasis on the infrastructure within the cell to...
Yes, they don't go into a lot of detail. I mean, the outline development plans show things like major open space, schools, perhaps corner stores, and clearly the different types of land use zonings. But they're, as I said earlier, they're fairly flexible documents. And if some developer came along and wanted to develop his or her land, with a different general sort of theory, I suppose, with road layouts and things, they can generally be accommodated, but as long as they meet the major principles of the arterial road network and the particularly... another major thing in the planning area, which isn't just unique to Berwick, but the former Dandenong Valley Authority were very good at it, was the valley floor policy. And what that meant was that major roads followed the valley floors, so that if you had a very intense flood, then the roads would act as the water carrying area. So we've got many roads in the city that have got a large underground drainage system below them or adjacent to them, but that drain is designed in such a way that on a, say, 1 in 100 year return period, the water would, the drain wouldn't be able to carry the water, and the water would flow down the road and still not affect the properties or the houses, so the houses wouldn't be flooded. So roads like Essex Park Drive and Kennington Park Drive and there's many others are what they call valley floor roads.
And was there emphasis on protecting creeks in their natural state? Or?
Well, that's another thing that the former DVA have been very good at, the soft engineering component. they sort of, I think they were always major leaders in this area. They were created not long before the city was created, and initially they had to do a lot of hard engineering, in other words, concrete and pipes and drains down in the Oakley, Waverley, all those sorts of areas which had to be concrete lined and so on, simply because they'd inherited an enormous problem and needed to have drains with large capacity to carry water. So from an environmental point of view, they looked pretty ghastly, and they were definitely needed, drains like Mile Creek and many of them around that area. Even Dandenong Creek, the section of Dandenong Creek from, say, Kids Road to our southern boundary, which is a concrete-lined drain. If there was just no alternative, because if it didn't have the high engineering parameters on the drain, it just could not carry the amount of water. But as time's gone on and they've got out into the greenfield situation, the DVA have been sort of one step ahead of public opinion, and they were very heavily involved in the soft engineering alternatives of putting in drop structures and realigning the creeks in a more natural way with trees and different, you know, grass species and rock beaching and so on, and building erosion control structures and things into their works quite a bit, and Cardinia Creek and Troops Creek and Memorand Creek and areas like this where they could set aside wider reservations at the time of subdivision and so on, which allowed them to do a lot more of the soft engineering work, and I think that's been very successful. They've done it very. They did it very well in other municipalities as well, and they were always very innovative with retarding basin use, and even things like Patterson Lakes and areas like that. They had some very good ideas. But so we've got, apart from even New Memorand Creek down in Doveton, that's got a low flow pipeline underneath from around from Waratah Reserve around to the Princess Highway, that area. Mm-hmm. But it's still a big grassed open invert which carries an enormous amount of water, perhaps once every 4 or 5 years.
Is it true, this is off the track completely, but is it true that Troops Creek and New Memorand Creek didn't exist before, you know, about the 1860s or 70s? Because I read somewhere that when those flats, like Troops Flat, were filled in, the creek was somehow created by the early, you know, the early farmers in that area?
No, I can't really comment on that. In the case of your Memorand Creek, I doubt if that's it might be partly accurate, but I doubt if it's overall that would be the case, because the Memorand Creek floodplain through Endeavour Hills, for argument's sake, I think is pretty natural. I mean, Endeavour Hills is pretty steep. So it hasn't. It's not like, you know, like the Kooyarrup Swamp or something like that. That's been sort of created for agricultural use or something like that, and then had to be drained and so on. So I doubt if that's the case on a large scale. It might be bits and pieces of it where it was, but that's the case. But I've never heard that theory.
Oh, I just came across it in one of the books.
And that might be right. Might be more the case with Troops Creek. I think I mentioned to you once before, but I don't think there's a fair bit being written on it, but the drainage of the Hallam Valley and all that area, that's a very very interesting bit of history, I think, and engineering, considering the particularly the siphons that are still in use along Centre Road that were built in the Depression. They're quite remarkable, even by today's standards, where you have two drainage systems running at right angles to one another at different levels, and that is very, very uncommon. I mean, it's easy to have roads at different levels, but it's not easy to have rivers at different levels and crisscross. There's some very, very good examples of this in the United Kingdom with the canal systems that were built by man, which in some cases were sort of different levels to the natural waterways. And I know of two canals that cross right angles, and the difference in level is several metres. There's a bridge, the Barton Bridge, across the Manchester Ship Canal.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another canal that way, and that one, they shut the gates like a lock, and then they turn this bridge around at right angles and the ships can pass. And then when they're gone, they turn them back, and then these ships can pass. Mm. There's even traffic lights on the two rivers.
Mm.
So the centre, getting back to Centre Road, that's somewhat analogous with the Centre Road. I mean, there's two totally different drainage systems there, with depending on the amount of water, the water can take two different paths. One is capable of carrying a lot more than the other, but the one that carries them, the larger, when the large one comes into effect, a series of siphons are established to take the water in the minor system onto the bay. The city, or the city, was created on the 1st of October 73, and clearly had no staff at all, and the shire acted as caretaker, caretaker council for administrative purposes until the city could had staff appointed. And during that period, there was an enormous number of meetings, and some incredible statistic on the number of meetings they had in the first 6 months or something.
Mm.
But the first two positions they advertised were the town clerk and the city engineer, they were advertised concurrently and on their own. And then the next wave of officers, there was the deputy town clerk and the deputy engineer and chief health surveyor and building surveyor and valuer, there was probably seven or eight senior staff in that group, were all advertised in the one ad. And I applied for the deputy engineer's position. For memory, I was appointed early December sometime, I would think. I know that it was a Friday, and I got rang up on the Saturday morning and asked to go to a meeting that afternoon at Loader and Bailey's down in Hawthorne. So my first official function was at Loader and Bailey's office. And that was a Saturday, about the middle of December, I would imagine. And then I was invited to a bus tour around the city, which was before Christmas. And I was also invited to the council Christmas function up at the Narrewarren North Hall, which was the week, say, before Christmas. And I started, I think, on the 14th of January, or the 15th or 16th, something like that, of January. The day I started was the same day that Max Pawsey started, even though he'd been appointed before me, and Ken Derricott, Max Croxford, and there was a couple others started the same day. Now, in that group that were appointed in that ad, there was Neil Lucas and Peter Tempest and Peter Meeking were all appointed to senior positions, and they were all ex-Shire. But the others that were appointed were Ken Derricott as rate collector, and came from Sandringham. Max Croxford, who came as building surveyor, and he came from Waverley, where I came from. John Strover was the first town planner. He came from Doncaster. He started the same day. There was also some staff. There was obviously the outdoor staff that worked in the two depots at Berwick and Doveton. The Shire had five depots. Two of them were in the part that became the city. And basically, there might have been the odd exception, but basically the staff that worked out of the Doveton and Berwick depots were transferred automatically to the city. And as far as indoor staff was concerned, there was very few. There was three young engineers. There was Max Fletcher, Brian Elliott, and Rod Spitty. And between the three of them, they would have only had perhaps 3 or 4 years' experience with the Shire. I think Max was the longest. He'd had a year or 18 months or something with the Shire. And I think Brian had about a year, and I think in the case of Rod Spitty, he only had a few months. There was a small sprinkling of other staff, indoor staff, not many. Most of it was recruited, pretty much new. Keith Nielsen was the first works superintendent, and he applied for the job. So he wasn't an automatic transfer. I think Ken Ashton was automatic because he was our first Parks and Gardens superintendent, and I think Shire had never had a Parks and Gardens superintendent until a year or so before the city was formed, and they appointed Ken as a Parks and Gardens foreman or some such position, and because most of their Parks and Gardens activities were in the city area, he came over as the first superintendent of Parks and Gardens. But Charles Lansdowne came over as our first motor mechanic. That was about it.
Do you think there was a conscious approach to doing the planning better here than it had been done elsewhere, since it was a clean slate in many respects?
Yes, I think it was. I mean, we were it wasn't just in planning. I think that it was a pretty exciting place to work, because we were all relatively young, and it was very very enthusiastic, because it really was starting from scratch. We had very, very little physical things. We had no office to speak of, and so purchase of all office supplies, desks and pens and paper and all sorts of things it's hard to describe, but it was all pretty fundamental. And the council were very enthusiastic too. They were all fired up, and we all came in with our own new ideas, I suppose. We didn't sort of inherit a lot of the old Shire way of doing things. So it was a pretty exciting place to work, and there was an opportunity there to do things a bit differently. And I suppose planning is the obvious one that's been talked about over the years, but things like even purchase of plant and so on have enabled us to. We had virtually nothing to start with, just a bit of old plant we'd inherited from the Shire, so council were pretty supportive in getting us fairly well equipped, so we had a pretty good go as far as buying modern equipment and so on. There was opportunities there that you'd only get once in a lifetime. A bit hard to say now with all the amalgamation issues whether that's going to be opportunities or what, I don't know, who knows. But this was certainly a bit different, I suppose, seeing we were the only one.
Do you think the opportunities were taken up, or do you think lost? Which would you...
No, I think they were taken up. I think as time's gone on, and it's only to be expected, we're just another municipality now. We'd still probably like to think we're a good municipality and still got good